And welcome to episode 89 of Tabletop Game Talk, a show where we talk about all types of topics in tabletop gaming. I'm one of your hosts, Josh.
I'm Chris.
And I'm Kitty.
Today we're talking about playing games just for the fun of it. In other words, win or lose, the game was still fun and something you want to do again. We'll take a closer look at the types of games that lend themselves most to this and those games that really don't. But first, a thank you to our Patreon friends of the show, Emil Giljam, George Gier, Adam Harrison and Corey Bell. Thank you to our newest patron, Toby Kraft. Also, a huge thank you to all of our other patrons as well.
Indeed, thank you. And I sent Toby an apology because he pledged for us on the Monday after we record, but the day before we drop the podcast, and he should have been on the last episode. So, Toby, thank you. I didn't mean to forget you. Let's see, announcements. Well, we should probably, because, you know, we break down that fourth wall right away. This is our first recording of all three of us in different places. We're hoping
OMG.
This... I know. Hoping this works out well. If it does, it means that Josh can't get out of being on the podcast nearly as often.
It also means that burn. Chris looks a little bit like a ball of pixels right now.
Dun, dun, dun. I'm just Pac-Man. It's video game, Chris. Let's see. Upcoming announcements. So I will be at the CMON Expo in Atlanta, May 11th through 13th. I will be at Origins for sure. I don't know yet if you guys are planning on being at Origins. Josh, I think you're planning to be there.
Oh, I want to be there for sure. Yeah.
And Kitty is a big old maybe, correct?
Yeah.
Maybe with a baby.
Yeah. It's all about the baby.
All right. But Gen Con, we do have a live show on Gen Con. That's the Friday of Gen Con at 5 o'clock. So we should be, and I think everyone's going to be there. That's far enough along. You know, baby will be almost walking by that point.
Depends, but yeah.
So, and I'll give reminders as we get closer to these conventions as well. The Gen Con one, Sean asked about it, so I figured I'd throw it out here just to let you guys know. Like I say, Origins, we have not decided we're going to have a live show or not. Probably not, again, just because of, I don't think Kitty can get there, but we will do something, some kind of recap Origins show.
And you can come find me in the social deduction room up until like 6 a.m. You know, I'll be chilling out there for most of the evenings.
Pretty much every night. Josh comes back to the room, and then I leave and go to the dealer's hall.
It's great fun.
Works out really well. Let's see. We are giving away something this week, and we have a new giveaway for next month. So I think I don't have any other announcements, and I think I should just probably announce this right away, because we have had chances where we just forget to announce the winner.
Oh, yeah.
Have we?
There was once or twice where I might have gotten to, you know, halfway through Kickstarters and realized, wait a minute, I forgot to say who won. So the winner, I'll announce the winner in a second, but we have a lot of new listeners, and I get different questions on every giveaway email or every contest, giveaway, whatever we want to call it. The question of, do patrons need to email us? And, you know, basically how the entries work. And I want to give an explanation of how I do these giveaways and why it's so scientifically accurate, and then maybe convince Kitty to use a system that she found that's better than my system. So currently what I do is I take the Patreon list, and each ranked in tiers on Patreon. So, and each tier has a certain number of bonus free entries that you're automatically in. So if you are a patron and you never email us, you will get those entries no matter what. Then I take the email list, and each one of those emails typically gets a single entry. So then I just copy all those email addresses and I put all of that in a spreadsheet. And then each one of them has a certain number of entries associated with it. Like I say, the emails are typically one, the Patreon, whatever levels they are. I then generate a random number that's between one and the number of entries we have total. And that just keeps going down the list until that random number hits somebody. So, you know, if the first person has 25 entries because they're a sponsor of the show, then they have, you know, 1 through 25, they'll win. 26 through 50, the next person will win, et cetera, it goes down the list. So I did that today, and I double checked because Adam has been a friend of the show forever, I think. And he's never won before, but he's won this time. So, Adam Harrison, congratulations. You now have a...
Congratulations, Adam.
Wow. It's the Adam Harrison.
The Adam Harrison. So, and I don't think I've ever emailed Adam either. So, Adam, I apologize because we really should be chatting more. But you are going to get an email and it's going to say, hey, guess what? You now have a shiny painted brand new Shadespire core set from the Warhammer. It's basically a board game, but in miniature game fashion, inspiration inspired. So everyone who's not Adam Harrison is just like, oh, I wanted to win something. So in the spirit of...
I have a really important question.
Yes.
Can I enter our bay giveaway?
No. The only people who are not allowed to enter, and it's all arbitrary because we make the rules, are the three of us and the three people that we're married to.
Man.
That makes sense.
That's it. That everyone else, because otherwise early on, we would have, most of our listeners were our friends and like, we're giving away something, but 80% of you are exempt from winning. So if you
Just by knowing you, I get to kind of win your cast-off games often. So
that's true.
And I have a whole stack of games that I'm needing to give away. Oh, that's the thing, too. At Gen Con last year, I brought, I think, 55 board games. This year, I'll probably have the same number. So
I don't know how you do it.
I accidentally just have too many games. Yeah. But anyway, we're going to give a lot of those away at Gen Con. I come with a bunch of games and I leave with zero because I don't want to carry them back. So the May giveaway should not shouldn't be a surprise for anyone who's been listening. We've hinted at it a lot. Seventh Continent, that is what you're going to be getting if you win the May giveaway. This is a Kickstarter exclusive game. You can't get anyplace else. It's one of the hottest games currently out there right now. It's super cool and awesome. It's an adventure game, not necessarily resource management, but sort of resource management, exploration, story, all kinds of cool things.
You've been raving about this, and I mean, you don't rave about everything. And when you described it to me, and I don't get excited about that many games, even I was really excited by this game. So yeah, I'm excited.
This game is so very cool, and it's a great solo game if you want to play it solo. It's great with somebody else. It's very freeform. You know, you just kind of decide who's going to take the next turn, whatever makes sense, and it takes maybe 20 minutes for you guys to kind of get in the hang of it. It's like, okay, I'll go over here. You go up there. I will do this. It's amazing. Sydney likes to complain about alpha player syndromes and things like that, but I'm playing this with her. And between her and I, there is no alpha player, even though all of the information is public information. So I think the cure for the alpha player is just have everybody being the same level of alpha. So it works out pretty well that way. So they enter its giveaway at tabletopgametalk.com and put the subject May giveaway in the subject line. Also put your full name and country of origin. If you're outside of the US, I am more than happy to send this to you if you win. You just have to say that you'll cover shipping. For this particular game, you're probably looking between $50 and $75 for shipping, which isn't necessarily crazy for this, because if you go to eBay, it's going for probably $200-$300.
Ooh.
It also comes in two parts. So this is the base game, the base box. It's Seventh Continent. I think they're calling it 1.5 or second edition or second printing or whatever they're calling it. There is a white box version of it, which is the expansion that goes along with the Kickstarter, but that's not going to ship till October. So if you win this, you will get this game now, and then in October, I will send you that as well. So you're going to get both. You're just going to get it in the two shipments that I'm getting it as well. All right, let's go to some Kickstarter stuff. I can get past what I backed pretty quickly. Actually, I backed Crisis, the New Economy, for $9 just to get the expansion.
Broken rule.
I know. Yeah. I make the rules, darn it. There's so many good games coming up too. It's like I'm struggling with myself to say I might need to break a couple more rules, but we'll get there. I'm not doing it yet. Expansions don't count, I've decided, but yeah. Anyway, Zombicide, I pulled the trigger on that one. This is Cool Mini or not. This is the space version of Zombicide, Zombicide Invader. And for those who like making money on games by buying and then selling it later, this one has a few things that I've noticed for Cool Mini or Not that you get. If you buy these for super cheap, you can sell them for super expensive. So there's two custom hero packs that are $15 each that you can only get through the Kickstarter. They're probably going to go for $45 to $100 after the game ships. Because what happens is you back it at $150 and they add these add-ons on there, and then you don't notice the add-ons were there. And then people who got the game is like, well, wait a minute, I wanted to get the add-ons too. And then it's too late. So,
disclaimer, this is not financial advice. Chris is not a financial advisor, and don't take it as such.
Yes, I will actually
arbitrage.
Yeah, I will actually say don't do anything I'm saying because this game could suck. It's not going to. It's Zombicide, but they also have a $90 limited print expansion, which I think is also going to end up going for like $250 aftermarket. So anyway, I had to back it because so many miniatures. And even for the price that, if you just paid everything that they have on there, they're still sending you so much stuff, it's way more than worth it. Games I'm watching. It started out with two, then Jeremy sent me a couple that he's like, have you checked these things out? And I hadn't, and I'm like, oh, these are really good too. So I'm going to talk about these in random order, as you know, Josh and Kitty are the only ones that are affected by this. But we're going to do Gravity Warfare first. So Gravity Warfare is a game, it's a dexterity game that involves dice and cards. And what you're doing is you have this kind of, it almost looks like a painter's palette sitting on a pyramid of some sort, like a cone. So the palette balances and you put your spaceships on it, which will tip the palette in different directions. So you roll the dice and you'll need to do something. The dice will tell you, place this kind of spaceship on this particular color of the palette. I'm going to call it palette. It's representation of space. And if you are the person that puts it on there when everything spills, you lose. I played this game in prototype form last year at Dice Tower Con. This game is really, really cool. This is a game that if you like dexterity games, this is, you're going to have a blast with this one because you can put, you're like, you put your thing on there and you want the whole space thing to tip as much as possible. So the next person who puts it on there is going to knock it all over. And there's a lot of strategy here because when you're rolling and you have to, like, there's certain ships and sometimes you have to place your ship on top of another ship and there's all these different things that can happen. But if you like dexterity games and you like space, this is awesome.
I'm excited by this one. And I think I'm really excited for the summer as well, because as well as dexterity games being something I like, yard games is another big one for me. I got a copy of Can Jam last year, and I think this year I'm going to have to expand my collection of yard games.
Wait a minute. Where are you seeing yard games?
Well, I'm not seeing them anywhere, but I wanted to bring that in because, you know, dexterity games gives me that same feel. It's like a big dexterity game outside.
I'll give you that.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I totally agree. But Gravity Warfare has no outside components that I know of, although it would be kind of fun to play it outside. It would just, the wind blows and then everything goes everywhere. That'd be awesome. The base game is $49, and then if you get multiple copies, it's cheaper as you scale up. This ends on May 27th, and that's Gravity Warfare. The next one is The Faceless. And this one, their description of it is a unique cooperative experience where you move a compass that reacts with high detailed double-sided figures containing a magnet. Now, it sounds a little weird, but what happens is you have these plastic figures, and there's a magnet in there with a north and south pole. So they're going to attract or repel depending on how that magnet is on there. Each of these figures, it's three-dimensional, but you can look at it from one side, and then you flip it around, you look at it from the other side, and they kind of look different, so you can tell which side is the north and the south side. You have this compass in the middle of this hex board, and its compass pointer is going to change based on where you have these figures around the edges of the board. So if you place a figure at a certain location, the compass needle is going to point move, and then you move the compass the direction that the needle's pointing. So you're trying to place these magnetic figures on the outside of the board to move the compass on the inside of the board so that you can eventually solve the puzzle. And it's hard to describe. They describe it as the game with magnets or something like that is their explanation of it. So I'm like, all right.
It sounds really cool. Doesn't sound like anything I've ever heard of before.
And that's the thing, because I kind of passed this one up, and then I'm like, well, let me click on this, because it seems hokey-ish. And as I looked at it, and I looked at the gameplay video, I'm like, all right, this is actually kind of interesting. Even if it's a terrible game, you get these really cool magnets and a compass to play with, so it's scientific and educational, too. This one only has one tier. It's $60. They're also saying there are no late pledges for this, so you either get it while it's on Kickstarter or you miss it. The Kickstarter is over on May 11th, and that is The Faceless. Now we get into the ones that Jeremy pointed out. The first one he pointed out to me was Hellboy, the board game. This one has just come on. It's already gotten a ton of backers. And this is a 1-4 player co-op game. And what happens is, It's a case-based co-op game. So you open up, you have these case files. It's going to give you, you know, a clue what you need to do, a mission. It's going to give you starting money that you can buy equipment. And then you're going around and trying to investigate what's going on. And you know you're going to have a final battle with somebody because it's Hellboy. And depending on what you investigate before you get to that final battle, you may go in being ready and you have the jump on the bad guy. Or what can happen is your investigations don't go well, and then the bad guy attacks you, and so it has the advantage. Or you could be completely knocked out, like everyone could get knocked out because there's enemies and stuff as you're playing the game, and then you wake up. If everyone's knocked out, you wake up with the bad guy, you have no equipment, and you basically have almost no hope of winning. So it's this really kind of interesting thing where there's always going to be this climactic battle, and the game is about how well prepared you are to get to that battle. So if you like Hellboy, nice. Yeah. So if you like Hellboy and you like cooperative games, this one looks pretty cool. Definitely worth checking out. It's not super cheap. There's only one tier. It's $132. That's translated from euros or pounds or some foreign currency. But the $132 gets you the base game, two expansions, and a bunch of extras that are for the Kickstarter. So there's actually quite a bit there. It's just they're saying, here's the one price. This is what we're doing. So they're kind of really taking the cool mini or not approach. That ends May 25th.
This sounds really cool. But, like, it is expensive. And also, is Hellboy the board game really the coolest name they could come up with? Like, there's got to be something out there in the Hellboy universe that would be a better title. Just pick something, for goodness sake.
I do agree with that. Yeah, Jeremy was actually surprised. Like, you know, it's like, it looks like they have the Hellboy license. And, you know, so it's an official thing. I think Hellboy had its height of popularity of 5-6 years ago when the movie came out. That was like a big thing. Yeah. So I don't know that Hellboy's really been on the radar. I'm pretty sure this is over $1 million at this point already. And that's pretty impressive for this. So there had to be some kind of following. But the game looks pretty good. Like, as far as gameplay is concerned, it doesn't look bad. It does that thing that all comic book games do, which is use like the comic. I don't think it's Comic Sans, but something like that. So it has that comic book art style, which is okay. But it's also, you know, designers, it is okay to use a more serious font and graphic style for your comic stuff. It's I give you permission.
You're getting into the weeds here, but sure.
So I want you to guess. I want to hear a guess from both of you. What year did Hellboy the movie come out?
Oh, I think it was a long time ago.
We're 2018 right now, so I'm going to say 2010.
2007.
Right, 2004.
Wow.
Oh, I was going to go for 2005.
So it 14... looks
like there's a new one coming out next year, though.
Yeah. I liked the movie. I thought it was crazy. I haven't watched it in apparently 14 years.
Can't go wrong with Ron Perlman. He's a legend.
So, okay. Hellboy the Gateboard Game ends May 25th. And then now let's go to the last one. This is one where I had no interest in this until Jeremy pointed it out. Because I'm scrolling through, you know, doing my whole Kickstarter browsing thing. And there was a picture of this purple monster eating this deck of cards. And I'm like, okay, this looks like a kid's game. Doesn't look interesting to me. This game's called Grawl. and they are touting it as a better werewolf. And yeah, well, and then I read it, and depending on what you like about werewolf, it could be better, it could not. It really kind of depends. But what it is a more mechanical version of werewolf. So no, there's no elimination. Each turn, someone will draw a card, and it'll be like bite or heal or, you know, stab or something. And those types of things will allow you to, if you're a human, or actually, if you get three stabs, you die. If you get three bites, you turn into a werewolf. And what the werewolves are trying to do is make sure everyone gets bit. So at certain points in the game, you will pass a card left and you'll pass a card right, and then that'll get shuffled and you'll look at your cards and you won't know if you got a bite card. You won't know if you know the werewolf's on your left or right. And what's basically what's happening is you're passing cards around and playing cards publicly at the same time, trying to figure out who the werewolves are. And then at a certain point, the game stops and they literally say the werewolves growl. And if everybody growls, then the werewolves win. If nobody does, or well, if only the original ones do, apparently the villagers win. So I think this game looks really, really interesting. I didn't have a ton of time to research it, but it's only $16 for the base game. For $24, you get the base game and some extra components and stuff. If you like werewolf, but you don't like the elimination and you don't like the overly accusational pieces of it, you want a little bit more mechanics in it, I think this is a really, really interesting alternative.
I'm very intrigued by this. I definitely want to check this one out.
Yeah, and yeah, I agree. So that's Growl. All right, let's oh, I need a review. So my review is kind of a rant.
Oh no.
Sort of.
This is going to be great.
Sort of, yeah. So I got this game, Siege Storm, and this came as a bonus surprise in the Lords of Hellas Kickstarter. So I didn't actually kickstart this. It's just like a, almost like a cedar game, because it's a collectible card game, an actual collectible card game with rarities and all of that, which is really where my rant begins, because this game is really, really, really cool. I love what they're doing with it. I love like the ideas behind it, and I'll describe that in a second. But the fact that it's a collectible card game makes me completely uninterested in it. If it was an expandable card game, buy extra sets, you have all the cards, you can build your, you know, decks from a set amount, I would be very interested in this, because the way this game plays is every card is dual use. So what happens, you know, you have cards that can be played in a typical CCG or card game. You have cards are instants, monsters, all these things. This game, everything's a monster. Everything's an instant. Everything can basically be everything else. And it just depends on how you play the card, which is what its effect is. So for example, you know, just the top card I'm looking at here, it's a scout. It costs zero. So I can just put this scout into play and that's fine. But I only can play one card a turn. If I put it into play, it becomes a monster with a 2 attack and no defense. If I don't put it into play, but I use it as this action, I get to draw 2 cards, and then it gets discarded. Once it's in play, you have 2 columns. One column is moving towards you. It's your opponent's monsters moving towards you. And then your column, your monsters are moving towards your opponent. When your monster moves 3 spaces, you can pick that up, and then you can do one of 3 things with it. So you can put it as a defense, you can make it attack, or you can turn it into mana. It's not really mana, but power, that then allows you to cast other cards further on. So now you have a card that costs, well, most of these cards at the beginning of the deck cost 0. So, but for example, Angelic Emissary costs 2. Now, if I have these monsters I've gone through and I've turned them into resources, I can turn those resources sideways or tap them, and I can spend that for the two resources. If I don't have any resources, though, then what I have to do is I have to discard that many cards from my hand, and that's how I cast things. Is essentially, I can, in my very first turn, I can do that. I just have to discard cards to be able to cast something. This game is really cool, and also your deck is your life. So what ends up happening is you draw 4 cards and you make 3 stacks of 10, which also align the sides of the playing field, and they kind of keep your row, so you can see what your close row, middle row, further away row are, is these decks of cards. But that's, if you're taking damage, you take these cards off, and that's how you know how hurt you are. And they are in stacks of 10, so you can easily say I have more than 20 life but less than 30 because I've you know, started discarding cards. When you're out of cards, you win. Like I say, really cool idea, really cool concept. The art on these cards are fantastic. A little, it's classic gratuitous fantasy for the female images. I will give it that for sure. But it's colorful. It's the iconography is fantastic. It's just a collectible card game. I don't think I'll be doing anything more with this game besides saying I have the original. And that's the other thing that they do is they constantly are referring to, hold on to this. You never know how valuable it's going to be in the future. And they keep talking about themselves as like, this is going to be a really valuable thing that you have in your hand. And just like,
you never know, could be the next Magic.
Exactly. So anytime a collectible card game is referring to itself as hold on to these collectible cards, I don't know.
What if the mechanics are cool? I mean, you could always cheekily steal them and kind of repurpose them for a different theme of your own.
It is not, I've not seen, well, I have seen several times where a collectible card game or collectible game will turn into a more living or expandable style game. So it is not out of the realm of possibilities that they change. Like I said, this, the only way you have this is if you back the Lords of Hellas Kickstarter. There's no other way of getting it right now. So okay. I'm kind of hoping that the community pushback will have them change their model and make it more of a living, expandable card game versus a collectible card game. Because it really does have a lot of potential. So that is Siege Storm. And now let's get into some feedback.
Yes, well, let's get some feedback about past episodes. And if you have feedback about this or any of our previous episodes, email us at podcast@tabletopgametalk.com or go to our Board Game Geek forums, easily found at tabletopgametalk.com/BGG. The first one we have is from Patrick, the Patrick that inspired last week's show. He says, fantastic show, bravo, your best show yet.
I think that's a really low bar, but I'm glad that we exceeded it.
No, I mean, you know, it's always nice when your own topic gets picked. He goes on, he says, we discussed the Scythe game in question in more depth after I told them there would be a podcast devoted to it. We came to basically the same conclusion, that I was right and Ashton was a douche for calling his shot before the game. I sent the podcast out to the group yesterday and made it mandatory listening before the next gathering. I already got positive responses back from a couple of them, and it appears you have a couple more followers.
Welcome.
Thanks for a great show. And from now on, we sit down at the table. Ashton and Jeremy will only be referred to as competitive friend and non-competitive friend. I love that part the most.
I was trying to keep names out of it. So, but now Patrick's given us, you know, full right.
Oh, yeah.
But I think competitive friend and non-competitive friend are definitely going to make a comeback in the future.
Oh, I love it. I love that it's become infamous in his gaming group now as well.
All right, Kitty.
All right. We've got some feedback from Sam regarding what comes after Gateway Games. I would say Next Step Games is the moniker that most hobbyists use for that level of games between intro or gateway games and, as you put it, TI4. If you put in a Google search, you get lots of hits, though most do tend to be from sites within the hobby.
Which would make sense because these are your middleweight games.
Yeah, I just feel like you have to like already know the term to find it.
Well, that's
like, so it's like, you know, I don't know. So it's a little tricky, but he goes on. As for the next game to buy, don't underestimate the Amazon aggregator that suggests other games you may like based on purchases of others who looked at the same types of games. It may not be as good at predicting the next games as somebody in the industry, but before I was more into the hobby, it did lead me to trying games like Pentago, Blockus, Hive, Suro, Tikhanoko,
sure,
and Carcassonne.
Takanoko? I don't know.
Something like that.
Sure.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think Amazon's recommendations are fantastic, actually. And especially if you buy a lot of your games on Amazon, you can just go to the other people who bought this game, bought that game list, and you'll get all kinds of cool ideas.
That never really occurred to me because most of my games were gifts. But that is a really good point that anything you're buying on Amazon always has 8 suggestions that are probably pretty good.
Yep. And one of the
so f-
One of the ways their algorithm works is it actually does, it'll say someone who bought this also bought that. So if you're buying this, you may be interested in that. So it goes beyond just like, oh, this has keywords that are the same. It's like this person has the same buying habits that you're presenting. So you may be interested. There just might be, you know, a few product purchases ahead of you. So follow them along because we want more money.
Well, one thing I've been trying to rely on is, well, not trying to, but I just happen to rely on this. And it's a bit of a shameless plug for our friends over at the Dice Tower, because their YouTube channel actually has great kind of the 10 best and then category. And, you know, when I wanted like casual games, for instance, because I wanted, you know, the rest of my family to get into it, I found that a great resource. They have so, so many in different genres and areas that I found that a great resource to kind of get suggestions as someone who's fairly new to the hobby. So that helped me quite a bit.
Yep, I agree. I actually still do that now just because there's so many games out there. I need to have something that points me in the direction of the newest, hottest stuff or just new, interesting stuff that I may not have seen otherwise.
Nice. Well, we've got another one from Terrence. He says, thanks, Kitty, for bringing the subject of table talk back to the card game table. At most Euchre tables, if chatting crossed a line, there could be a 2-point penalty assessed. Chris's point late in the episode about if someone revealing your plan upset you, it was not a good plan, took my brain right to the end of a Scooby-Doo episode where they would have gotten away with it if it weren't for those meddling kids.
I like being the meddling
kids. You're welcome, Terrence.
Yeah. All right, one more.
Okay, from Christopher. My wife and I recently introduced 3 new games to my parents and a couple of friends of theirs who typically only play cards. I introduced them to 3 new games, Century Spice Road, Colorado, and Truck Off the Food Truck Frenzy. All were hits, even though one of the friends didn't want to learn more than one new game because she was afraid she wouldn't remember all the rules. I persuaded her that all of these were easy to learn and introduced one new game each day. Everyone enjoyed all of them. Even non-gamers can learn light to medium games and enjoy them despite their skepticism up front. So I feel like this is a little bit directed at my comment last week about my mother-in-law. and I totally did not mean to say that people who are non-gamers can't learn medium style games. This was more, you have to kind of know your audience. She has a very short attention span, so I wouldn't toss her in with a medium game. I would keep her more on the quick style games because she doesn't sit at a table for more than 10 minutes regardless. So, but I do agree there are some great ones. And he adds a list here. He says, I've made a point of acquiring several non-gamer friendly games. And after introducing my parents to Century Spice Road, Las Vegas, and The Builders Middle Ages, they are now gamers. They now play board games together and with us when we visit, and we never have to persuade them to do so.
Yeah, I really think that one of the things that every game collection should have are these kinds of really easy to learn, but fun to play games. And it sounds silly when I say, but fun to play. I guess what I'm trying to say is fun for hardcore gamers to play as well. I think Century is one of those games that where you can, there's some deep strategy there, but it's light enough where everyone has a chance and it still keeps it interesting for the gamer and the non-gamer, and maybe you turn people into gamers.
It also depends on randomness. So it feels like, you know, the non-gamer doesn't, like, the gamer doesn't have a big advantage over the non-gamer,
yep,
too.
Yeah, the more randomness, because we talked a little bit about, you know, whole luck and things like that. Luck is a great equalizer for skill levels, and that's why there's a lot of luck in gateway games, is because everybody can feel like they can be competitive and like you were just out of the running. If only that die would have, you know, done the right thing, or I'd drawn the right card or something like that, which just gives you that, I call it the slot machine effect, where you're like, just one more spin. I was so close. I had 2 sevens and the other one was just off the line. They do that on purpose. All right, let's go on topic where we can, you know, talk about what we're supposed to be talking about.
In this episode, we're talking about playing for fun. All games should be fun. Otherwise, why are you playing them? But today, we're going to take a closer look at those games you play and may not even keep score for. Or a game that has such compelling gameplay that playing the game is the highlight of the experience, not who wins or loses. But first, Chris wants to respond to Todd's post on BGG.
So the BGG thread for this is fantastic. The BGG threads have been getting great. But Todd's response to this was probably my favorite. So he opened up with a quote that basically was, "The goal of the game is to win, but it's the goal that's important, not the winning." And this is Knizia, which I believe is Reinhard Knizia, who is a very prolific game designer. So, but then he goes on and says, "I have a bit of a knee-jerk reaction when I hear play for fun, because all too often it's code phrase for actually meaning I don't care, so I'm just going to play to screw around. And that is not what I intended this episode to be about at all. It's not about people goofing around and saying this is fun for me. It's about games that are actually enjoyable while you're playing them, or just as enjoyable, like what you're doing in the game, as opposed to the ending and the result of the game."
And I've just thought of that. I'm actually like almost prescient, because me mentioning yard games earlier was, I think, genius, because a yard game is the perfect example of a game where, okay, I can be a little bit competitive, but I never get as competitive with a yard game as with something like, I don't know, Scythe or Homeworlds or some more like heady strategy game. Like, I'm having fun attempting to throw the beanbag into the hole in cornhole. So for me, like, yard games are good because they get me out of that competitive space.
Yeah. Well, and that's a good point, because when you're playing something like Bags or Cornhole or whatever you call it in your place, or, you know, there's a whole bunch of them, you can be very competitive there, or you can just be having fun, you know, trying to knock the bag in the hole while you have a beverage in your other hand, right? So it's a game that you are playing literally just for the fun of it, even if you want to throw competition in there a little bit more.
Can't you say that about any game, though?
Sort of. I don't think... Well, I do want to cover one other thing, because there was a number of people that said playing to win is the fun. And I don't disagree with that, but again, it's not necessarily what I'm thinking about for this. If you're not having fun playing to win or playing to try to win, then something's wrong with the game. But if you look at something like tournament anything, you know, Magic or chess or a lot of like two-player games, you're playing to see who the winner is. And you may have fun in that tactics and strategy, but when you're playing something like chess, moving the chess pieces, that by itself, I don't think is all that interesting. It's like solving that puzzle against your opponent that is interesting, and then coming up with the big win, the power move at the end, and that's what you're kind of going for. That's where the payoff is. What I am thinking of is games that are fun while you're playing it. Pandemic Legacy is probably a pretty good example. Just to start with, when you're playing that game, win or lose, at all points you are completely engaged, and you're trying to figure out, what's the best move? What is our goal? What is our mission? What are these objectives we're trying to solve? Everything is making you present in the moment. And whether or not you win or lose, it's sure that's that, we just are so close. Or, yeah, we finally made it. But the entire experience was enjoyable and fun. Do you guys agree? No?
I mean, yeah, I get what you're saying. I think there's definitely levels of that. You know, there's, and like you've kind of alluded to it already, because, you know, chess is definitely at one end of the spectrum. And I think my example of a yard game is at the other. And it's interesting to see where those ones in the middle are. I think Pandemic Legacy is a great one, because there's that group feeling. A lot of co-op games have that feeling, because at least, you know, you're all in it together. And part of like working out together gives you that feeling of camaraderie and that interaction and that socialization that, I don't know, I just really enjoy in co-op games. And so I think there's a lot in the middle there between those two extremes.
Yeah, well, you also have games like, we'll talk about Gloomhaven. Gloomhaven is a game that you are probably going to win every scenario you go on. just because it scales in a certain way. And if, you know, losing that game is just, it happens so infrequently. So if you're playing something and you know that you're always going to win, there has to be something else about the game that's compelling to make the you want to keep going back and playing that game. And in fact, a lot of video games are like that as well. You know you're going to get to the next level. You know you're eventually going to get through this.
Depends what game.
Well, sure. But but a lot of them are is just kind of going through the motions. Candy Crush. Let's, you know, I don't want to talk too much about video games, but Candy Crush is one of those things where something is compelling about playing that game because you keep doing the same thing and you keep getting to the next level. Now, that one is...
Oh, so much juicy feedback.
So there's other games. Arcadia Quest is probably what really made me think of this. With Arcadia Quest, it's a competitive game, and just playing the game, like, I don't care who wins. I have no interest in by the end. It's not entirely true. I want to win, but I also don't care because you're playing a 6-game campaign. And the way it works is you have a winner of each game. And then at the end, you tally up your medals to see who won the campaign.
Right.
If you can lose several of those games and still win the overall campaign. But the fun of playing that, the fun of like the between the game stuff of like adding new equipment to your characters and, you know, coming up with new ways of working those characters in the next game. That's the compelling part of the game. It's not necessarily winning or losing. It's just having all of these fun components and pieces in front of you. I don't know. Like, is that's different than playing to win, right?
I think that what a lot of these games have in common is they're all very puzzly. They're all like you're trying to like solve something either for yourself or together. Like, maybe not Arcadia Quest as much, but it does sound a little bit, I haven't played it, so I don't really know, but like you're trying to like maximize your character, like build like a person, and that's kind of, that can be puzzly in its own way. But I do think there's like a feeling of solving something that is fun regardless of winning or losing. You feel like you're getting somewhere.
Yeah. Well, I would agree. I think that sometimes puzzly is there, but now, and I don't want to jump to, well, actually, let's jump to role-playing games, because Arcadia Quest has that character-building thing to it. Role-playing games, one of the things that I get asked a lot, is for especially for people who haven't played it, is, well, how do you win? A role-playing game, nobody wins. Everybody wins, but nobody wins. So you're playing that game just for the fun of it. You could. But even then, you might still... Have you really lost? You saved the world, maybe, right? So it's an activity, which, I mean, some people would say a role-playing game isn't actually a game. And depending on which game theories and things you subscribe to, maybe you could argue that. But it's still an activity that we do when we play this game, and we play it just for the fun of playing it.
Hmm. Yeah, I think there's an element of the experience that we're talking about here and all these things. You know, there's an experience to be had with role playing, and it's the experience of, you know, finding out and exploring and, you know, maybe interacting with different characters and seeing what happens. You know, there's that sort of causality element where it's like, oh, what's going to happen next? And I think where the causality and experience element comes in again in a different genre would be like something like a dexterity game. You know, I can enjoy that. You know, I can enjoy my own failure in a dexterity game because, you know, this is crazy thing, like tower just toppling to pieces and everyone's like laughing hysterically. Like, that's an experience. And so there's definitely an element of all these games where there's something about the experience that's compelling. And I guess this is kind of what you're alluding to with this. What is it about it that, you know, is compelling despite not needing to win?
Yeah. Well, and you see a lot of party games that do this. So, you know, you're mentioning Jenga. There's no winner in Jenga. There's just a loser. But the loser, like, nobody's like, oh, ha, you lost 5 games of Jenga. I've never heard anyone reference that, right? You play the game for the experience of the game. It doesn't matter if you've won or lost because it's fun to do both. If you win, you get to watch somebody else lose. And if you lose, you get to laugh along with everybody else. Like,
yeah,
you don't see that hyper-competitiveness. Telestrations. You know, you can potentially win that game But who keeps score?
Nobody keeps score.
Right.
No one keeps score. Same with your favorite game out there, Cards Against Humanity.
Exactly.
Or Apples to Apples. No one keeps score. You just play, like, it's more of an activity than a game.
Sure. And like I say, I will admit that some of these could be classified as activities versus games, but not all of them are activities.
And
when does it become an activity versus a game? Actually, that's a whole nother topic. We'll do that later.
What is a game?
But here's another one. Social deduction games. If you like a social deduction game, you are playing it for the experience of what's going on in the game. Now, you could win and lose, and there's all the, you know, trash talk at the end of the game for winning or losing. But you are playing those games for what's going on in the game while you're playing the game.
I completely agree with that. Yeah, it's just, you know, it's such an amazing experience. Like, I got so hooked when you first took me to Origins on social deduction games for that reason. And it really was, wow, like, you know, it's crazy to think that this guy, you know, completely hoodwinked us the whole way through. We thought he was the safest guy in the world. And then right in the last round, we find out he's the evil one. Like, and there was just some sort of, like, almost like that film, The Usual Suspects, when you find out that, you know, some revelatory thing at the end. And you're like, oh my goodness, how did I not know? Like, and it's just such a visceral experience. But even all along the way, like, you know, talking to the people, kind of, if you're the bad guy, bluffing people out, like, it's such a poker type thing, but even more interactive than that. Like, there's so much Machiavellian manipulation going on. I love it. It's so cool.
And I hate it.
Well, and that actually makes complete sense too, because there are a lot of things that people do for fun that other people do not find fun at all. You know, board games. You know, some people just have no interest in doing that, and it's mostly because they're not trying. But, you know, if you have tried and you're just like, yeah, you know, I'd rather go outside and play basketball or something, which is completely fine, and you can do both. Not at the same time, unless, you know, usually not at the same time. Unless you're playing with Josh, there's some turns where you could probably go out and get a game in.
Classic burn.
Sorry, I had to get one in there. But yeah, I don't think that all of these games, like Cards Against Humanity, lots of people love it. I can't stand it. I am miserable when playing that game. I want to keep score with that game just so it ends. So for something like that, you know, you still have to have the right group of people. And I think a lot of this comes down to that.
I still don't understand why you hate it so much. I mean, I get it in a way, because I kind of agree with you. Like, I think there's not really much going on and people are trying to be funny. And as soon as you get through a lot of the cards, it's like, oh, I've heard that one before. But I don't know. Like, what's your beef with it?
Mostly that there is no real strategy to the game. It's to me, there's nothing to the game. I'm taking the first part of a sentence and I'm matching it with the second part of a sentence, and then hopefully someone finds it funny and then picks that card. But then...
But when they're funny, they're really funny.
Well,
isn't that great?
Sure, but there's... Yeah, we can't even say half the cards on air without losing our family-friendly status. But you make certain cards, and yes, it's going to be funny. It's still, I would rather spend my time doing pretty much anything else.
Huh.
So speaking of time, do you think game length affects this? So, because, like, I went back and forth on this one. When you said what, or like playing for fun, I immediately thought, like, oh, like short games. Like, short games are easy to play for fun. Like, real quick, like, oh, we'll just play this for fun. But then I thought, like, don't you play the longer games more for fun? Because you have to, like, really enjoy doing it to want to play them, right? You have to really think, like, oh, this is my thing. This is what I think is fun, to want to play something like, not to rag on it, but TI4, where, like, oh, right, this is going to be my whole day.
Yeah. So this actually kind of, the reason I wanted to talk about this topic is because I've been playing a lot of games recently where time will pass and I won't, like, realize how much time has passed.
So yeah.
We've had a couple marathon sessions of Arcadia Quest because it's on our 10x10 and it's campaign based and all that. We've played this game 8 hours straight and not realized. When you can do that, you are playing the game for the fun of playing the game. you are not counting wins and losses. Yes, you are a little bit, but that's just kind of a to put a period at the end of the sentence.
Yeah, it's just a part of it.
I have a caveat, though. I mean, my thing is that I really like games that are long like this and very strategy based and quite competitive. But the one issue I have is that sometimes it feels like I have a love-hate relationship with them because I do enjoy it, but then there's almost part of me that's like so like cares about winning that like it's almost painful. Like and like obviously, you know, losing is very painful in those situations. And there's just some part of me that's got this immense amount of tension almost throughout the whole game. It depends what kind of game it is. And games that set this off could be like Homeworlds or chess, anything very strategy heavy and heady. But yeah, it's kind of weird. It's a bit love-hate.
So I think we need to find... Well, and I admit that a lot of games that I really enjoy... It's the tactics, the strategy, the coming up with the way to win... is the primary reason I enjoy those games. And I don't know that I have the endurance to play those games. Like Rising Sun is another game I've played recently. I really, really like this game. I don't think that after finishing a two-hour game of Rising Sun, I would be, let's reset and play again. Like, because I need a break. My mind is just, you know, it was an intense game. Let's go play something that's a little bit more lighthearted and you know, just fun to do as opposed to anything else.
You need to, like, decompress after playing it. It's like, all right, now I need to, like, take a deep breath, do something in the shallows for a while.
Yep. And I think for games that you're playing and having fun while you're playing it, you don't have that same feeling at the end of it. So, like, a role-playing game, when you're done playing a role-playing game... you're talking about the role playing. You're talking about what you just did and looking forward to your next session, assuming it was a good game. So, like, that's the kind of thing that is really interesting to me in these games, that when you play them, you're having so much fun, you don't even realize it's not taxing. It's just enjoyable. It's energizing.
That's true.
It has almost that same feeling of like when you walk out of a movie theater and you're like, oh my gosh, it's night now.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, where you've just, like, completely lost all sense of time.
That's, exactly.
Like, you know you're really having fun when that happens.
Josh, you have something?
Well, no, I mean, I think you've hit the nail on the head there. And I think it depends on the game, obviously, because, you know, some games just lend themselves to that more, but there's always a limit. Like, you know, I love, you know, playing Can Jam, great yard game that's come out in the last few years. But even that, it would probably take me hours and hours and hours and hours to get fully tired of it. But even that, I could reach a limit eventually. But I mean, that's a given, really. Yep. I mean, like, too much of anything is a good thing, is a bad thing.
Yep. And I think that not, well, like we touched on just a moment ago, like Can Jam for me, I'm okay playing a single game. And then I'm just like, okay, I'm done. And if for those who don't know, it's basically a trash can with a hole cut in the side and you're throwing a frisbee at it.
Yeah, it's awesome.
It's a great game. But it's like, I have a limit to how much I can play that before I'm like, I'm fine watching. And I think all games are like that. You know, it just depends on how much invested you are. And
yeah.
I don't know. I think there's a lot to your favorite game. If Josh, what is your favorite game?
Oh, goodness, this is tough. I mean, I go back and forth on this. I mean, like, there are definitely favorites. And I think, you know, throw in Witch Hunt, an amazing social deduction game that definitely outshines Werewolf. But then sometimes I'm just not in the mood for that accusatory experience, and there is a lot of tension in that. So when I'm not in the mood for that, then something like Can Jam then goes much higher in the list. So it could depend on my mood as well.
That's interesting you say that, because Werewolf and those types of games, I enjoy playing them while I'm playing them. I, you know, time disappears and all of that. When I'm done with a game, though, a lot of people just want to, like, immediately start up another game. I'm like, nope, I need to sit out the next game.
It's emotionally draining, I agree.
Yeah. But it's kind of that middle ground where I do enjoy playing it while I'm playing it. And it's all about playing for the fun. I don't really care about the result, but I do get emotionally involved in the outcome of the game.
Right.
And that's just part of how the game plays. But whether I win or lose, it's still interesting.
I think that's why I don't like them, because I get too emotionally invested in them. And it, like, I get, like, instead of playing for fun, it's like I'm like upset, I'm like angry, and like I feel all of the things I would feel if I was actually in a village attacked by a werewolf. Like, it's too much for me. I can't. So, like, you know, that 5 minutes in is where I reach my threshold with that game. Is like, you know, somebody accuses someone and I'm like, ah, I don't know, maybe it's like my parents are both lawyers. My lawyer child brain is just like broken by this game.
Quiet of the day.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what's interesting there is, so you're describing like an emotional response. And I think if you enjoy that, that's another emotional response. So we're both having emotional responses. We're just having different ones to the same input.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, bottom line, it makes it what people either love or hate different types of games.
Yeah.
So, Kitty, what is your favorite game?
Oh, I knew you were going to ask me, and I don't know. There's so many good ones that I've been playing recently. But I'm going to throw out another dexterity game, because I was really enjoying playing it with my family. And this is Monkey Tower.
Okay. Describe it.
So, you have these little monkeys, and they're kind of like domino-sized blocks. And you have round cards, and you roll three dice, and they have different colors on the sides. And you have to put your monkeys on the dots on the card that match the colors you rolled. So they're randomly dispersed all over the cards. You have to balance them. And what I'm really enjoying about this game is that my 5-year-old niece will play it with us just as much as my, you know, I won't mention her age, mother. And, you know, we can all sit down and play it together.
And you enjoy, so, and for, you know, full disclosure, did not let Josh and Kitty know I was going to ask this question, because I didn't know I was going to ask this question. But the answers to both of them were games that you enjoy while you're playing it.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe that's because we're in that mindset. But if I was right now to think about my favorite games, like Arcadia Quest would be near the top of the list. You know, that game is just so compelling to play. Now, there's a lot of other games. You know, we recently played Viticulture and Power Grid for our Eurogames episode, which, since we've played two, we only have one left, and then we'll have the actual episode. And, you know, Viticulture really gave me this feeling of, while I was playing it, like, there were so many cool things I could do. I want to play that game again because of all the different options I had in game. Power Grid was all right, but it's not as compelling. Because I just wasn't as immersed in it. So I think, again, it's like, actually, Power Grid's a really great example, too, because your last turn is the only thing that matters in that game. It's all about playing the game until you get to the last turn. But it's all about thinking about that last turn, too. We'll talk about more of that in the Eurogames episode. All right. Is there any other games or game types that we can think of? What about solo games? Like, why would you play a solo game if you didn't enjoy the actual activity of playing the game?
Because it's puzzly. It all comes to puzzles for me.
Well,
I love the puzzling it out.
So is it solving the puzzle or the act of puzzling out and trying to get to a solution?
I think it's the act, because even if you don't solve it, it's still fun. Even like playing a game of like straight up solitaire, like you just know, like some of them are unwinnable. Like, oh, the two is under the ace. There was no way I could get it. Like, there's just nothing to be done, whatever it is. But like getting to the point where like, oh, I know exactly what card is under there. And like, you know, just being able to have like the, I went through it all. I got the knowledge. I know what's going on. I feel like I've like figured everything out. It's like a little mystery to solve almost, I guess.
Yeah, I definitely see that. I think like Seventh Continent, this game like the very first game you play, the recommended scenario, which is probably shouldn't be the recommended scenario, but the recommended one, most people say it's going to take anywhere from 12 to 15 hours to finish. Like, you have to enjoy what you're doing. Otherwise, there's no way that you could, like, you can't just, let's do a quick game of Seventh Continent. No, it's like, let's invest our entire week. So, yeah, I think with solo games, someone had mentioned in the BGG thread that, you know, for solo games, fun trumps winning. Like, if you're not having fun while playing a solo game, it doesn't matter if you're winning or not. You're not going to keep playing that game.
And there's also Take That Games,
yeah,
which is an interesting one. And I'll put that in there quickly just because I find that, like, it's a double-edged sword again. It's kind of like, if you're the kind of person that enjoys kind of like teasing each other and getting back at each other, then you're going to love it. But if you're someone like me who's competitive and can be a bit sensitive, Take That Game's probably not the best for you.
Yeah, that's actually true. So people who love Munchkin, which is, you know, kind of the poster child of Take That Games, really love the gameplay of Munchkin. They love screwing over their opponent. They love, like, double crossing and that behavior. You know, you can kind of stereotype it into, like, frat boy, you know, gameplay. But if you like that gameplay, you are having a blast just playing that game, whether you win or lose. Now, I will say probably in that scenario, you're gloating a lot more when you do win because it is so already so heavy on the whole Take That and the, you know, smack talk type of, you know, situation.
Yeah.
But no, yeah, that's a good point. Those types of games can definitely be games that you just play for enjoyment. Probably more people than not, at least in my experience, do not enjoy those games at all.
Right.
Goes back to the right group again. But yeah, if you like that, you're going to have a blast. But I think it all goes back to Todd's quote of basically the goal of the game is to win, but it's the goal that's important, not the winning. And having something that allows you to drive what you're doing, this fun thing that gives you some kind of direction, that's really what makes a game. That's why I think Dungeons and Dragons is a game, because there is a goal. There's always a goal, and that's what's driving your decisions, is to get to that goal. Whether that's a win or a lose, you know, we don't really call it winning in role-playing games, but there's always some goal, because if there's not, it's not a game. You know, social deduction games, even, you know, your yard games, your party games, all these things have goals. And that's what makes something fun, is like how you get to that goal. All right. Anything else?
All good.
I don't think so.
All right. Well, then let's call this a show. You can follow us on Facebook. We're at Tabletop Game Talk Podcast. You can follow us at Twitter at Tabletop Game TLK. And I'm on Twitter at Game Master Chris. You can also leave us an iTunes review. It's really easy to leave iTunes reviews now because you can do it within the app. But it's so easy, you can just put the stars in without actually writing a review. So write a review, because it helps more if you actually write something down, and we love reading them. If you want to support us, go to tabletopgametalk.com/Patreon. Remember, this month we are giving away Seventh Continent, so it's probably one of the only ways you're going to be able to get it. And for the rest of this, we will let Josh talk.
Indeed. Well, Tabletop Game Talk is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network. Thanks for listening, and remember, we love your feedback. So email us with comments or questions at podcast@tabletopgametalk.com. Finally, a huge thank you to our patrons: Emil Giljam, George, Adam Harrison, Corey Bell, Sam from New York, Jason Strong, Terence Miltner, Stephen Seitz, Michael Ohl, Trevor Olson, Brian Arnold, Sean P. Kelly, Daniel Shepard, C. Marie, Rudy Liu, Benjamin Heimowitz, Jerry Huang, Stefan, Get to the Chopper, Phillips, Caleb O'Brien, Jennifer Engelbrecht, Justin Winard, Christopher Dong, Jason Marks, Jeremy Fisher, Carl Hammond, David Radke, Lance Morgan, Nick Quickstra, David Sellers, Jason Rodney, Michael Yanikowski, Miles Clark, Cindy Lum, Phil Swartzwell, Jordan Livingston, Greg Kamai, Zoe Ng, Chad Covey, Anne Reynolds, Eric Huffman, Adriana Dong, Christopher Vincent, Nate, Flaz Flintham, Sean Peck, and Toby Kraft. Until next week, when we talk about game iconography and components, keep playing games and having fun.
Good night. All right, now I cross my fingers that I can put all three of these things together and we have a normal, regular podcast.
Let's hope it works. So.
Otherwise, we'll be back here tomorrow, same time. Everyone remember what you said, and we'll just deliver it all the same way.
Sounds easy peasy.